Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the show, we hear stories from Brian Lynn and Christopher Jones Cruz. Dan Friedel tells us what's trending today. We finish the program, as always, with an American story. And now, here is Brian Lynn.
Former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev warned this week that tensions between Russia and the United States have reached a dangerous point. His comments followed a series of issues that have strained relations between Washington and Moscow. Among them are the war in Syria and U.S. accusations that Russia is involved in cyber attacks aimed at disrupting U.S. elections next month. "I think the world has reached a dangerous point," Gorbachev told RIA Novosti, Russia's state news agency. The former leader said he did not have any specific advice for either country. "But I do want to say that this needs to stop," he said. "We need to renew dialogue. Stopping it was the biggest mistake." Gorbachev, 85, is credited with easing years of tensions between the Soviet Union and the West. He led the country from 1985 to 1991. He signed several important nuclear disarmament deals with the United States during his rule. In 1990, he received the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts. On October 3rd, the United States said it was giving up its efforts with Russia to negotiate a ceasefire in Syria. U.S. officials noted continued military attacks against civilian targets in the nation. Russia answered the American actions by suspending a number of nuclear cooperation agreements with the United States. It also moved to build up its military forces in Syria and along the Russian border with Europe. Recently, Russia deployed Iskander missiles to a base in Kaliningrad, which sits on the Baltic coast between Poland and Lithuania. Those missiles are able to travel about 500 kilometers in the air and carry nuclear weapons. German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier wrote in the Bild newspaper about the deployment. He said he thought it created a more dangerous situation than during the Cold War, when the Soviet Union competed against the West. Some military experts agree. Igor Suchagin is with London's Royal United Services Institute.
"The dramatic reaction of the West about Iskander now is that it's just wake-up call. It's just very clear message. It's that ice-cold bucket of water that wake up, you are not living in safe world."
During the Cold War, the Soviet Union deployed large missiles in what was then East Germany and Czechoslovakia. Suchagin says this time around, the missile deployment is more psychological.
The idea is to intimidate the West, and because Russia does not have any other tools to fight for its competitiveness on the international arena but psychology. Even Russian military are comparatively weaker than the NATO's forces.
Other issues have also increased tensions between Russia and the United States. Last week, U.S. officials accused the Russian government of being involved in attacks on American computer systems. They suspect those cyber attacks are meant to disrupt the U.S. elections next month. The cyber activity resulted in thousands of emails being leaked from the Democratic National Committee last July. In the past, U.S. officials had said they suspected Russian involvement in the leak. But in a statement last week, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and the Department of Homeland Security went farther to actually name Russia. We believe, based on the scope and sensitivity of these efforts, that only Russia's senior-most officials could have authorized these activities, the statement said. In reaction, Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybkov said U.S. officials were creating what he called anti-Russian hysteria. He accused the U.S. administration of using dirty methods to blame Russian cyber attackers ahead of the U.S. elections. I'm Brian Lynn.
This is What's Trending Today. People in the United States who enjoy smoking Cuban cigars celebrated Friday. The U.S. government ended its restriction on cigars, a tobacco product made in Cuba. The U.S. did the same for the alcohol called rum. Both are two well-known products from Cuba. They had been banned in the U.S. for almost 50 years. American travelers who purchased Cuban-made products were not permitted to bring them into the U.S. That changed in 2014 when the government agreed to let travelers return home with cigars and rum valued at $100 or less. But now even that restriction is over. The U.S. government announced the news on Friday, along with other plans for boosting trade with Cuba. One Facebook user reacted to the news story with the post, "Gentlemen, light 'em up." Many other people also celebrated on social media. One user posted a video of a movie actor reacting to good news as his status. But another Twitter user was not so sure the news was good for those who make cigars. He joked that Cuban cigars will no longer be cool if they are easy to get. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Where did Jerry Watson go? For 24 years, Jerry wrote and reported for VOA Learning English. She covered many subjects. In her final year at VOA, She also began working as a broadcaster. People who had enjoyed her stories since 1990 finally got to hear some of them in her own voice. They liked what they heard. Her voice was clear and easy to listen to, and, like Jerry, friendly. Many people wondered why she had not been broadcasting earlier. Then, 19 months ago, Jerry was no longer heard on VOA, and her byline was no longer seen. Where was she? After a long career in journalism, Jerry simply and quietly retired. She said she wanted to spend more time visiting her children and grandchildren. Jerry returned to visit her friends at VOA recently. Everyone was happy to see her again. She said she misses her work at VOA, but she does not regret retiring.
We all reach a time when work comes to an end. For me, it was about 25 years with VOA and working for a Chicago daily newspaper years ago. I felt that I had a wonderful career and it was time to sleep late in the mornings.
Jerry also wanted to complete the novel she had been writing in her spare time. Finally, she was able to spend hours every day on the project.
I write on my sun porch with only the company of my cat, two cats to tell the truth, and that felt very strange after working all these years with good friends at VOA. We talked to each other constantly, so writing in the quiet felt lonely at first.
But you like it now?
I have totally adjusted. And I have to say, I had no trouble adjusting to sleeping a little later in the morning.
The book has just been published. It is called Sorrow Street. The main character is an American reporter named Sandra Shelton. She is sent to Brazil to report from Rio de Janeiro. She is depressed over a recent end of a relationship. She is also unhappy leaving Washington, D.C. Jerry says Sandra is modeled on the many reporters she has known who have dealt with serious disappointments in their life. In Rio, Sandra tries to help some mysterious children, a young boy and his younger sister, who appear to be living on the city's dangerous streets alone. The reporter is pulled into a drug dealer's dangerous kidnapping plot. She also discovers a part of her past, a past she has tried hard to forget. Jerry Watson has traveled to Brazil many times. The book includes details that only someone who experienced the complex and beautiful country firsthand could know. Jerry first visited Brazil 18 years ago. Several return trips followed. She was back again last year.
Just walking around and talking to people and seeing how things were going. And you would have to be not very observant to miss the fact that things had been economically better for quite a time there, and having bad days again, corruption again, has made people feel very sad.
Jerry says those who have read the book, including other authors, have said they enjoyed it. Here, Jerry reads from Sorrow Street. Pedro, the little boy Sandra has been trying to help, is now in a shelter.
It was after midnight, but the shelter was still noisy. A couple of young kids cried and mumbled in their sleep. Pedro rolled around restlessly on the soft bed. It seemed to swallow his body. He'd often longed for a softer place to sleep than the pavement, but now he thought a cot was kind of flimsy. He dreamed of ice cream with pieces of chocolate cookies in it. He dreamed of his mother, her wide red and blue cotton skirt swishing as she pulled up the threadbare sheet to his waist, as she patted at the deflated, torn pillow under his head on the mattress. She spoke softly as she leaned over him.
Jerry is very active in her retirement. She swims and hikes. And twice a week, she teaches people from around the world American English. In her classes, she uses some of the stories she has written for VOA Learning English. Jerry seems very happy and looks great. Retirement agrees with her. That means it is good for her. Jerry is now writing another book. It will tell about her long life and the many adventures she has had. She thinks it will be easier to write than a fiction book. When it is published, we will write about it, and you will hear from Jerry Watson again. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Today's story is The Return of a Private by Hamlin Garland.
The soldiers cheered as the train crossed the border into the state of Wisconsin. It had been a long trip from the south back to their homes in the north. One of the men had a large red scar across his forehead. Another had an injured leg that made it painful for him to walk. The third had unnaturally large and bright eyes because he had been sick with malaria. The three soldiers spread their blankets on the train seats and tried to sleep. It was a cold evening, even though it was summertime. Private Smith, the soldier with the fever, shivered in the night air. His joy in coming home was mixed with fear and worry. He knew he was sick and weak. How could he take care of his family? Where would he find the strength to do the heavy work all farmers have to do? He had given 3 years of his life to his country, and now he had very little money and strength left for his family. Morning came slowly with a pale yellow light. The train was slowing down as it came into the town of La Crosse, where the three soldiers would get off the train. The station was empty because it was Sunday. "I'll get home in time for dinner," Smith thought. "She usually has dinner about 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon." And he smiled. Smith and the other two soldiers jumped off the train together. "Well, boys," Smith began, "here's where we say goodbye. We've marched together for many miles. Now I suppose we are done." The three men found it hard to look at each other. "We ought to go home with you," one of the soldiers said to Smith. "You'll never be able to walk all those miles with that heavy pack on your back." "Oh, I'm all right," Smith said, putting on his army cap. Every step takes me closer to home. They all shook hands. Goodbye. Good luck. Same to you. Goodbye. Smith turned and walked away quickly. After a few minutes, he turned again and waved his cap. His two friends did the same. Then they marched away with their long, steady soldier's step. Smith walked for a while, thinking of his friends. He remembered the many days they had been together during the war. He thought of his friend Billy Tripp, too. Poor Billy. A bullet came out of the sky one day and tore a great hole in Billy's chest. Smith knew he would have to tell the sad story to Billy's mother and young wife. But there was little to tell. The sound of a bullet cutting through the air, Billy crying out, then falling with his face in the dirt. The fighting he had done since then had not made him forget the horror of that moment when Billy died. Soon the fields and houses became familiar. Smith knew he was close to home. The sun was burning hot as he began climbing the last hill. Finally, he reached the top and looked down at his farm in the beautiful valley. He was almost home. Mrs. Smith was alone on the farm with her three children. Mary was 9 years old, Tommy was 6, and little Teddy had just turned 4. Mrs. Smith had been dreaming about her husband when the chickens awakened her that Sunday morning. She got out of bed, got dressed, and went out to feed the chickens. Then she saw the broken fence near the chicken house. She had tried to fix it again and again. Mrs. Smith sat down and cried. The farmer, who had promised to take care of the farm while her husband was away, had been lazy and dishonest. The first year, he shared the wheat with Mrs. Smith. But the next year he took almost all of it for himself. She had sent him away. Now the fields were full of wheat, but there was no man on the farm to cut it down and sell it. 6 weeks before, her husband told her in a letter that he would be coming home soon. Other soldiers were returning home, but her husband had not come. Every day she watched the road leading down the hill. This Sunday morning she could no longer stand being alone. She jumped up, ran into the house, and quickly dressed the children. She carefully locked the door and started walking down the road to the farmhouse of her neighbor, Mrs. Gray. Mary Gray was a widow with a large family of strong sons and pretty daughters. She was poor, but she never said no to a hungry person who came to her farm and asked for food. She worked hard, laughed often, and was always in a cheerful mood. When she saw Mrs. Smith and the children coming down the road, Mrs. Gray went out to meet them. "Please come right in, Mrs. Smith. We were just getting ready to have dinner." Mrs. Smith went into the noisy house. Mrs. Gray's children were laughing and talking all at the same time. Soon she was laughing and singing with the rest of them. The long table in the kitchen was piled with food. There were potatoes, fresh corn, apple pies, hot bread, sweet pickles, bread and butter, and honey. They all ate until they could eat no more. Then the men and children left the table. The women stayed to drink their tea. "Mama," said one of Mrs. Gray's daughters, "please read our fortunes in the tea leaves. Tell us about our futures." Mrs. Gray picked up her daughter's cup and stirred it first to the left, then to the right. Then she looked into it with a serious expression. "I see a handsome man with a red beard in your future," she said. Her daughter screamed with laughter. Mrs. Smith trembled with excitement when it was her turn. "Somebody is coming home to you," Mrs. Gray said slowly. "He's carrying a rifle on his back, and he's almost there." Mrs. Smith felt as if she could hardly breathe. "And there he is," Mrs. Gray cried, pointing to the road. They all rushed to the door to look. A man in a blue coat, with a gun on his back, was walking down the road toward the Smith farm. His face was hidden by a large pack on his back. Laughing and crying, Mrs. Smith grabbed her hat and her children and ran out of the house. She hurried down the road after him, calling his name and pulling her children along with her. But the soldier was too far away for her voice to reach him. When she got back to their farm, she saw the man standing by the fence. He was looking at the little house and the field of yellow wheat. The sun was almost touching the hills in the west. The cowbells rang softly as the animals moved toward the barn. "How peaceful it all is," Private Smith thought. "How far away from the battles, the hospitals, the wounded, and the dead. My little farm in Wisconsin. How could I have left it for those years of killing and suffering?" Trembling and weak with emotion, Mrs. Smith hurried up to her husband. Her feet made no sound on the grass. But he turned suddenly to face her. For the rest of his life, he would never forget her face at that moment. "Emma," he cried. The children stood back, watching their mother kissing this strange man. He saw them, and kneeling down, he pulled from his pack three huge red apples. In a moment, all three children were in their father's arms. Together, the family entered the little, unpainted farmhouse. Later that evening, after supper, Smith and his wife went outside. The moon was bright above the eastern hills. Sweet, peaceful stars filled the sky as the night birds sang softly and tiny insects buzzed in the soft air. His farm needed work. His children needed clothing. He was no longer young and strong, but he began to plan for next year. With the same courage he had faced the war, Private Smith faced his difficult future.
For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.